Welcome back to Lifeline on Near FM 90.3. My name's Michael Sullivan. Now, on the line, I have Dr. Jonathan Egan, and he is a chartered health and clinical psychologist and trauma researcher at the School of Psychology at NUI Galway. And we're going to be chatting about new research being conducted by NUI Galway's School of Psychology, which will explore how childhood experiences affect adult well-being during the COVID pandemic. Good morning, Dr. Egan. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. It's Jonathan.
Jonathan. Well, I have to say, that was a bit of a mouthful.
It was a bit of a mouthful.
And I have a habit of getting tongue-tied and falling over things, but I think I got through that reasonably well.
You did well.
So, Jonathan, tell us about this new survey that you're looking to do.
Great, Michael. Well, what's happening is back in 100 years ago when the Spanish flu was out, we didn't really have the kind of technology to be able to look at big populations of people and how they're managing stress and the pandemic. So a group of us researchers decided we'd have a look at the Irish population and see, you know, how are they getting on in mental health wise and their well-being, how's their vitality, how's their sleep, how's their well-being, and to check and see how it is, and give a number of measures on a survey. But about 3 years ago, we did a study and we found that if people had, you know, a not such a good childhood, maybe a childhood where they didn't feel very cherished or very met by their parents or cared for. Maybe they grew up in a very busy family with lots of kids and there wasn't much time for them. Or maybe there was some kind of maltreatment or kind of emotional abuse where kids were called names and that. And we discovered that these kids actually did, when they grow up as an adult, did much worse in their day-to-day than people who maybe were a bit physically or sexually abused even, which is quite a surprise to us. We discovered that they had twice the levels of symptoms of sort of the 15 most common ailments if you go to a GP, like back pain, neck pain, headache, gastrointestinal upset, period pains, all the different things you go to your doctor for about, with twice the level in people who maybe had emotional maltreatment as a child, and also twice the level of depression, twice the level of anxiety, and twice the level of stress. So we're stunned by that, to be honest. So we're adding that in as part of the survey to see, you know, during the pandemic. That was 3 years ago, before the pandemic, and now I wonder how these people are faring compared to other people who maybe weren't abused as kids and were doing fine. But also, in general, we want to know what's happening to people with this kind of threat around them all the time. How are we managing it? When you think about it, we're taken away from our ability to have our shared interests or to share kind of enjoyment of the activities you'd like to do usually. And that kind of gives us our vitality usually, but that's been taken away from us in a way to keep us safe. But so a lot of people are going to what we would call is kind of the collapse position, the collapse society, it's immobilized. And now some people are taking to the bed or they're getting cold hands, cold feet, and their physiology is changing into a way that they're becoming kind of almost shut off as if someone's unplugged them. And we're hoping to see, you know, how can we help those people? And there's lots of kind of ideas we have about that, but that's kind of the background of the study, Michael.
So is that something that you would say is quite common in that people who have had childhood traumas would have a difficulty when, we'll say, the pressure comes on, when there's the coping mechanisms as adults are not as strong as maybe as somebody who came up in a loving and strong environment?
Yeah, well, see, it's really interesting because they might do just as well, if you know what I mean, before the COVID comes along, when all the things you can do to keep us healthy are but they're taken away from us. But if you think about it, where we learn how to, if we're upset as a child, if we've got a cut in our knee or if someone's bullied us, what we tend to do is go to one of our attachment figures, we call them, but one of our parents or people who love us, and going to go, someone hit me, or I'm sore here, give it a kiss, or take care of me. But sometimes when we grow up in some families, the person we want to go to for that, to assuage our fears, to give us a cuddle, that person can be the very person we're frightened of. And what happens there is that those children where the mum or dad are not available or who are angry or not approachable, they learn very quickly as a child not to go there, if you know what I mean. And we take that with us in adulthood. We learn our blueprint of what do we do when we feel upset. Do we keep it to ourselves or do we go to other people? So I think that's part of it, is that these people from an early age learn to keep things to yourself, don't share them. And, you know, when they grow up, obviously, they would have had a chance to find ways of enjoying themselves and ways of calming themselves and ways of managing stress. But those things are often, you know, more than a couple of kilometres away from the house, or involves golf, or involves going for bridge, or, you know, something like that. But that's been taken away now.
What did you go and do that for? You went and you mentioned golf.
Oh, no.
And the courses are closed. I'm in flitters here without a round of golf.
I know it's really a bizarre one, to be honest. I started because my son wanted to play last year, and I started and I just loved the walk and out in the open air when the rabbits or their hares are flinging around in the early morning, and you just get this lovely it's very good for you, number one, but also the sense of connection and the sense of calmness and you know, so it's a bizarre one that stop people doing it. But maybe it's a projection because Golfgate, you know, that they don't want to mention the Golfgate word. I was actually on holidays with my family in the Station House Hotel in Clifton at the time when all the politicians came down, the 80 of them, and in the same hotel as them, and we couldn't believe what happened. My wife discussed it. She's a GP, and she discussed it because they were not, you know, 6 feet away from each other, and all the families felt a bit frightened. It was a horrible, horrible affair. But I think the Golfgate, I think, because there's no rationale otherwise, is there, Michael? It doesn't make any sense in any world.
I can't
go out in a huge field.
I can somewhat understand it from the point of view of we're all in the one boat, that they don't want to, we call it, show favouritism or a perception of favouritism to one sport or another, that let everyone feel that they're all in the one boat. And I can understand it from that point of view, and that's what keeps me going.
Yeah. But there's another part, I'm sure. But like the person who jogs without a mask on is far more dangerous than any golfer who's in the middle of a massive field on his own hacking at a ball.
Well, I have to say,
I'm not a trained virologist.
I'm a walker myself, particularly at this time, and that is a one thing that, and I have no problem with people running along this ground.
Of course,
but
no.
I always look at and say, I want to keep well away from them. And they come running up behind you, and they go past you, and they give you plenty of room, but they run up, and I'm saying they're breathing out now. And that's coming into the air.
Huge. Yeah.
Am I going to be breathing in theirs?
It's like watching Gaelic or rugby in the winter. You can see the exhalation of, you know, the expiration of the air. And it goes at long distances, you know, metres upon metres upon metres. But so I think these things taken away from us really affect us. And in a way, these are great distractions. If I'm having a really bad day at work or arguing with my wife or the kids, having a game of golf or something gets you away and, you know, decontaminates you for a while and you come back with a better head in you. Whereas if we can't distract ourselves from those, interpersonally it makes it more difficult and tenser. But if you have a mind that's more anxious or a mind that kind of goes in circles with ideas and doesn't have anything to share with people, I think that it can take over. It can start to, no distractions, no externally supportive world. You know, McCluskey, my trainer in York, would talk about it. It's very important if you grew up with either an anxious mind or an unsupportive background, to make sure that you have a very supportive external environment around you to support that internal. If you've got rooms in the house you don't want to go into, when trauma comes in, such as the COVID, those rooms, the doors start opening and you have to keep them closed unless you're able to manage them or have someone good to talk to, you know?
Yeah, and it's a very interesting thing that you said there, because I'm touching wood here, I've never suffered from depression. But I know people who have, and just as you mentioned there about the anxious mind of someone who just can't, it's like It's like that this ever-going circle. They just can't break the circle of thinking about one thing and saying, well, that can happen and that can happen and that can happen and that can happen. And is that what, in a way, depression is? Is that you get caught in a cycle and just can't get out of it?
Yeah, well, there's the cycle upon cycle, but there's also that inertia. And I think the being unplugged feeling that we all have is a bit similar to depression in a way. I think it kind of it ups the ante or increases the volume of the internal feeling of desolation, the internal feeling of nothingness. But also what could be happening is that the COVID for some people could almost be unconsciously a bit like the feeling of what it was like when they're a child. The feeling of the no-thingness, the not being cherished, or we know that you're far more likely to experience depression as an adult if you have a lot of loss or separation as a child. If your parents are taken away from you, you're taken away from your parents, or if a parent dies, or you know, or someone very close to you dies, you're far more likely then, if you have a loss like that before the age of 14, then to develop depression as an adult. So if you think about the different psychological theories, you're looking for loss. You're looking for separation. You're looking for the lost love. You're looking for the person who... It's a bit like some of these people had to grow up under the moon, under the warmth of the moon rather than under the warmth of the sun. So this coldness of the separation from people in COVID, it's probably bringing a bit of a shiver back from the past, I'd say, for some people. Now, I don't know fully, but I certainly some people I talk to go, this is giving me the shivers of my childhood.
If somebody is feeling like that, is there anything they can do about it, or do they need help from their loved ones now, the people around them now?
Well, loved ones are obviously the people to talk to, but if you think about what we're talking earlier, some of these people grew up learning that don't talk, don't go near someone close to the family because you might get told to shut up or don't be so stupid or get hit even, you know, or just ignored. So in that case, it's often good to maybe, there's actually a brilliant phone service in Dublin called Connect Counselling, and it's on Wednesday evenings through to Sunday evenings from, I think, about 5 o'clock till 10 o'clock at night. And you could just check that online. I think it's within the 1-800 number 3, but they've got trained therapists there, for particularly for people who've experienced a less than adequate childhood or a less than positive parenting experience, or if they've been sexually abused or physically abused, or just not cherished as a child. And they're brilliant there, and they're all trained therapists who can talk. Other people would phone the Samaritans, or the primary counselling and primary care, if you have a medical card. Counselling and primary care will give you 6 free sessions just to really... It's like we get lost in the map or something, isn't it? It's like we suddenly don't know where we are, and we just have to be helped to just find our place and the direction we're going in, the compass. The warmth of the caring eyes of another human being who understands, meets you as a person. I think Una McCluskey, my supervisor in New York, would say, like, you know, just being met as a person where you're at and understood makes all the difference. It makes all the difference, really, to us, for someone just to say, ah, there you are now, Michael. Okay. And really listen to you and says, I can hear where you are and where you're at. And to be honest, that will, you know, a problem share is a problem have, but we met by somebody. A bit like that movie The Queen, where the queen suddenly sees the deer and the deer sees the queen. There's moments of magic where we get met by somebody and that we actually feel real again. I think we get connected again to humanity.
I know I did a little bit of work a few years ago with Kunwira, you know, Sister Concilios. And I always remember, and this was around all the different sites they have, and it's a huge organization all around the country. But everywhere you went, you saw little plaques and things, and they all said, and I'm trying to think of the actual phrase, well, I'm not going to get the phrase correct, but I'll get the idea of it, is nobody can change me, I have to change myself.
Nobody can change me, I have to change myself,
And the idea of it was that everyone was there to support you.
Yeah.
But nobody can actually make you change. You have got to want that change yourself. And then the people are there to support you make the change.
Yeah, and they're waiting with their arms open, ready to catch you if you make that. And that's a huge thing, isn't it? And as you know from the people that you worked with there, a lot of them had horrendous pasts and horrendous, you know, where they would have learned, don't approach people, it's dangerous. So the leap of faith is huge, isn't it?
It is. And the other thing, and so this I learned this from talking to Sister Concilio.
Oh, wow.
She was telling me that...
What was she like as a person, Michael, is she?
She absolutely adorable.
Okay, yeah.
Now, has a hard side to her, as you have to have.
Oh,
but
yes, yeah.
The love in that lady is just incredible, and
wow.
her sister, who is Sister Agnes, is lovely as well. Sister Agnes runs the house in Brewery, down in Limerick, and it's a real family. That's the whole idea of the whole thing. It's based on that kind of family model.
Yeah. Wow.
But beautiful people. And of course they have the facility in Athenry over there beside yourselves, and they have a step down facility as well in the city, in Galway City itself as well.
Great. Wow.
And I could go on talking about what that lady has built in 50 years. It is the largest provider of residential treatment and then step down facilities, not just in Ireland, but close to being in Europe.
Wow.
It's that big.
I didn't realize it was that big.
It's absolutely enormous, and it flies under the radar.
Under the radar. We must have it not only with Golfgate and the Station House Hotel with the politicians. We must have a lacuna or blind spot or some kind of thing with alcohol or you know the that it's not mentioned really. It's part of you know the trauma that's there. You know. You've got a parent who isn't emotionally able to self-soothe, I suppose. Mm-hmm. They won't be very good as a model, really, to teach the kids how to self-soothe.
Yeah. And this what I was leading up to in this is, how do people who have had that type of trauma as a child, how do they actually... how do they I'm not going to use the word get better. How do they learn to cope as an adult?
Yeah. Well, there's a really interesting group of people I worked with for about 5 years. 8 years I worked with. I was director of counselling for people who experienced institutional abuse as children. I was in Tullamore there for 8 years. And I took part in the... I was one of the researchers with the Commission to Inquire into Childhood Abuse. And we looked at, I think, about 250 people who were going through the commission at the time. And there's a group of them, about half of them, who had what we call an avoidant style of attachment. So in other words, they when they were 5 or 6, they said, I'm going to manage myself. I'm not going to lean on too many people to help myself go through the world. And they didn't do too badly, to be honest. You know, they in relationships, they grew up in a very... the kind of old-fashioned nuclear family, you know, the man was a man and the woman was a woman. And unless they got some kind of chronic health condition or that, they didn't have to reach out too much themselves and didn't do too badly. But the other half would be more anxious, and those didn't fare as well. They would have had more kind of post-traumatic stress and more emotional upset in that. And with an anxious style, relational style, what happens is you go to your doctor, you say, thank you very much, doctor, and leave. But soon after leaving, the anxiety goes back up. And then you go back again, and then you get to talk to Dr. Michael, and then, Dr. Michael, thank you very much. When you leave again, the anxiety goes back up. So it's those people who need to, as well as people who can kind of manage on their own, to learn how to sit and soothe themselves through, as sisters continue to say, we're here to help you learn how to. And it usually takes, you know, for this type of stuff, a couple of years, 2-4 years of counselling, you know, which the National Counselling Service provides now. And I think the number for Dublin is 1-800-234-110. But if you ring there, they'll give you the local number, you know, it's 1-800-234-110. And they provide, like, long-term counselling for people who've experienced abuse during childhood in institutions as well as outside. There's something about the meeting of another person, I think it's a corrective kind of emotional experience, isn't it, where you meet someone who gets you, meet somebody who can hear what happened, and meet somebody who can say, well, you know, that was wrong, but this, I want us together to explore how ways of you becoming yourself again, because people become very defended and they learn, they're almost like the trees in the west of Ireland here. When the wind comes in, they're kind of bent over, they've been misshaped by the trauma, by what's happened to them.
Indeed.
So we have to help them learn straight again, stand straight again, sorry.
Indeed, and that just going back to a bit of the Mike Kunwira experience, that a lot of it was, a lot of the therapy was peer-led. It was people who had gone through the process and through the problems themselves, supporting people who are trying to get into recovery. And I think that and of course the thing you have to remember about all these things is that they are not quick fixes. They are a long term and they're relapses. There's relapses, and you step up again, and each time it gets a little easier to step back up.
It's almost like you're mountain climbing or something, but you've got someone who's a bit ahead of you on the mountain climbing experience. You're going to have some falls, but you're going to learn how to climb up a bit again. And it's frightening. It's frightening to say, because it's so much easier to go to something that's easier to soothe you than the hard work of of you know, of keeping yourself kind of balanced. The thing is, for the society not to blame, I suppose, is a huge thing. You know, it's to understand that these people's self-soothing mechanisms were not given a good chance at the start. You know, how could they not be anywhere but for here now?
Indeed. Now, we're running out of time quickly, and what I have to say, believe it or not, we've been talking for nearly 25 minutes.
Oh my goodness, Michael, sorry, enjoying the conversation.
Yes, time flies when you're really enjoying yourself. But we've got to say, you're looking for participants.
Yes, please. You don't have to have you know, a traumatic background. We want to see everybody and how they're coping with COVID now. If people can get on Twitter, they can look up Ask Dr. Jonathan Egan, and there's a link to the study there. If people do a search on the web, or if people are emailers, they could send an email to h.grorke, that's GORORKE. The number one at nuigalway.ie, and they'll be able to link into that's Hilary, my doctoral student. She's been training as a clinical psychologist, and we thought this is a lovely study to do now.
Brilliant. And what we will do is that we will podcast the interview, and what we will do is we'll put a link to the site, or the we'll put in the email there,
Michael,
for someone to if they want to get in touch. Dr. Egan, Jonathan, thank you very much for chatting to
me. Thank you very much, Michael.
I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
You too. Thank you.
Take care. All the best. Bye-bye.